It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Jenny Mattingly, and today I'm joined by Roger Platt. He's the Senior Vice President of Global Policy and Law at the U.S. Green Business Building Council. I want to say business because there's so much business going on with the building right now, but the U.S. Green Building Council. And we're going to talk a little bit about federal efforts to create a more sustainable, greener government, but also some of the broader picture, I guess, on what's going on both in the private sector internationally and how that all ties into what the federal government is doing. So welcome.
Thanks a lot, Jenny. It's wonderful to be here.
And why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and also about the Green Building Council, who you are, where you got started? And
sure. The U.S. Green Building Council is a nonprofit organization here in Washington, D.C. It has over 200 employees, and it's most famous for creating a standard that people will be familiar with if they roll by in their car big construction sites and see that a building is claiming that it's going to be built to the LEED, Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design Standard, or LEED standard.
And there are a couple different LEED standards, correct?
Right. I would say more than a couple. There's one for existing buildings, one for office buildings, one for retail, one for schools, hospitals. There's a range of different standards.
And that all generated from you guys.
And all generated over the last, say, 15 years from the U.S. Green Building Council's voluntary committees of experts. Again, hundreds of people from around the world now that get together and continuously assess what makes the most high-performance, sustainable building for the range of users that I just mentioned.
And you said you have quite a large operation. Do you have members? How does the building council
work? We have about 17, I think maybe now about more like 15,000 corporate members. And then we have a bunch of individual members through our chapter network of over 70 chapters throughout the country and different networks in other countries as well.
And by individuals, are you talking people or are you talking businesses?
Okay. Through the chapter of networks, and then companies through membership in the actual sort of mothership U.S. Green Building Council here in Washington.
And these are companies that have signed on to help promote sustainable building?
They tend to be companies that are either using the standard as part of their corporate commitment to sustainability and responsible leadership as a company, or they're companies who are providing some service or product that is used in these high-performance buildings. That tends to be the range. But we have 30 or 40 Fortune 100 companies, a bunch of Fortune 500 companies, right down to small businesses that maybe, put the U.S. Green Building Council logo on their truck as they go to provide organic gardening services.
Right, so whatever it is.
It's a broad range of companies.
And why don't you tell us a little, before the show started, you and I were just talking a little bit about how the Green Building Council got started and also the broader, what was the beginning of the green movement? Because this isn't new, what we're going to be talking about.
Sure. Well, let me tell you a little bit about how it got started. And I am a bit of a latecomer to the process, and I'll tell you a bit about how I got involved. But let me first tell you a little bit about sort of the basic story, the kind of classic American success story of the three guys in the garage that have this crazy idea that in the future, rather than everybody bragging that they have a super green building, just trust us, it's green. We needed to set up some sort of standard that had sophisticated capacity to ratify the statements of corporations and others and governments sometimes that were claiming to build super green buildings. So we created a standard with a lot of input from the recognized experts in government, opinion leading academic and expert institutions, architects, engineers, building owners, developers, a whole range of people that were known as leaders on this issue. And they put together, in a sense, a kind of multi-tiered checklist, Chinese menu of things you can do that are really intended to encourage people to do the maximum amount of greening and sustainable investments in their building that make sense economically. Economic sustainability is a big part of the commitment of the U.S. Green Building Council as well. It's kind of this three-legged stool of the economics, the people, and the planet, or the people, planet, profit would be the alliterative way.
There's always a little bit of that profit side in there.
Yeah, exactly. No, the profit thing is important because for every wonderful speech that someone gives, for every beautiful building people might see, the thing that probably has the most impact in really making an idea move in our country is where people can make money doing it and it does something wonderful. So the financial element is really significant.
And when are we talking about when this first, the three guys in the garage got started?
So the three guys in the garage, Michael Italiano, Rick Fedrizzi, and David Gottfried, all from very diverse areas, one a lawyer, one a in the real estate development world, and one in marketing and product development. They sort of began their combustion of energy and ideas about 20 years ago. But the lead standard, again, for which the organization is most famous, really didn't hit the scene until about 14 or 15 years ago. And then in the last 5 years, it's gone viral.
Well, and I was going to say, when I drive by or when I know, you know, where we live in this area, I see the lead now and more emphasis on green building and hitting certain standards now than over the past 15, 20 years. It seems like this has been a trickle and all of a sudden the gates have opened a little bit.
It's in a kind of exponential growth period. And to give you the flavor of how fast it's growing. So in the first few years, again, they were certifying a few buildings every year, and then it became a few hundred buildings. These became sort of iconic exemplars of what a green building could or should be. Today, at the U.S. Green Building Council, and today I mean just like today, the date on which we're making this this talk show, 1.7 million square feet of commercial space is certified as completed in accomplishing its green building, and every day on average that we certify over 1.5 million square feet, 150 countries, 40% of the folks that say kind of register with us, their commitment to build these kind of green buildings come from outside the United States. So if you look back to what these three folks did to kind of try to make markets a little bit more reliably green in the United States, it's fair to say in their craziest, wildest dreams, they did not imagine that there would be 150 countries, you know, the equivalent of almost two or three Empire State Buildings a week being certified. It's a staggering example of a nonprofit initiative, very great kind of American success story. And as I hope we'll talk about it, the federal government had a role both in helping launch this and is now one of the most significant users of the LEED system as well.
And do you find, you just mentioned all the international folks who are signing up for this. Are a lot of your members becoming international? Or is it still mostly a U.S.-driven goal?
Well, a whole bunch of our members were, and many more are becoming international, and certainly China, which over the next 15 or 20 years will build the equivalent of all the buildings in the United States and then all the buildings in the United States again. Twice the number of buildings now in the United States will be built in China over the next 15 to 25 years. And so whole bunches of countries are looking at that market with great interest. It is certainly our second biggest market. And, you know, I don't want to get, again, you tell me where you want me to go on this, but the international engagement with our standard is staggering.
Well, and I think that's important to understand that this is a global movement, not just a federal or a private U.S. business movement, as we're looking at how the federal government's also trying to play in and be a leader in this movement.
And let me just say, in terms of this international phenomenon, a lot of it is driven by international corporate investment. So, for example, even though many of the buildings and companies that are building buildings in China and throughout Europe are not U.S. companies, I was in Finland last year, and I said to somebody, you know, what's with this LEED building in Finland? I mean, surely just saying the building is built in Finland is a better, you know, brand than saying it's LEED.
Right.
And the guy said to me, well, you know, a couple of years ago, that might have been true. But now half the commercial real estate projects in Sweden, Finland, and Scandinavia generally have an international investor. And they want an international metric for determining the sustainability of their buildings and their investments. So it's interestingly kind of got this big, and I want to get to that when we talk about the government, this interesting sort of check of where do international markets, where do sophisticated investment markets feel that this sustainable performance of buildings does to improve the quality of the building.
Right. And I think that's a good place to take our first break for a few seconds here. And when we come back, we'll finish our talk and start rolling this into what the federal government's doing on green building. And you're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko. And I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. Geico now offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. Geico, the government employees insurance company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about Geico's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jenny Mattingly, and today I'm joined by Roger Platt to talk about the government's efforts in green building and sustainability. And when we left for our commercial break, we were talking about the broader picture of what's going on in both globally and nationally, how this got started. And you mentioned, Roger, that the federal government was a player at the very beginning. How were they involved in the green movement and some of these building certifications going forward?
Well, just as there are the kind of the guys in the garage story in the private sector, there was a very alert federal employee at the Department of Energy. His name is Mark Ginsburg. He still works there. And he found out about this effort to create a standard that would be a way to really make sure that people's claims about green building were accurate. And I can't remember, I think initially there was a grant of about $100,000. It's hard to imagine an investment of the federal government that has done quite as well as that initial $100,000 investment in these ideas and these people. I believe for the next couple of years, it maybe cumulatively got up to about $400,000 investment. Small organization still, five or six people, making sure that the best ideas were being combined, giving it the credibility that as a startup organization, it would not have had but for federal government engagement. So the federal government gave it credibility, as did a few national environmental organizations, because, again, no matter what the expertise is of people in the private sector, there's always going to be more credibility when organizations whose entire mission is the environment. So the Natural Resources Defense Council, a bunch of other organizations also were very helpful to us in the beginning. And but the federal government, not only did they provide us with some resources to get going, but they were among the first to actually test run some of these standards. And so federal buildings could be part of what is now this huge demonstration project of over 10,000 buildings. But in the beginning, it was just every building that got certified was a huge deal. And the federal government made a commitment. Today, 15 agencies of the federal government are committed to building LEED buildings. The Pentagon is a LEED for existing buildings certified structure, at least four of the five portions of the Pentagon. One's probably got such secret things in it that we can't really be sure that the building is green. But basically, there's tremendous engagement, and the federal government now is about 6% of all the certified buildings that we have, 9% of our certified and registered. That means buildings that are committed to going green haven't gotten there yet. So it's one of our biggest users. Very diverse types of uses, whether it's residents for returning vets, whether it's hospitals, schools, office buildings, military office structures, campuses that the military has are part of our world.
So when we're talking about the federal government and greening the government, because that's kind of been a buzzword lately, mm-hmm. is, you know, greening the government or GovGreen, things like that. This isn't a new thing. They've been doing this for years. It's just there's more emphasis on it now.
Like all good ideas in Washington, they're always being reintroduced as new ideas. And I'm all in favor of that. If you can have a good idea and you keep saying it's new and fresh and new and fresh, that's fine. This is not so new. And some of the ideas are not all that technologically breathtaking, but they are ones that really benefit from a tremendous bipartisan investment. So you have back to the days of the first Bush administration, I think a tremendous commitment to lead. His son had a tremendous commitment to lead, George W. Bush. His energy secretary was a big believer in this. Similarly, with Clinton and Obama, you're seeing commitments to this. And sometimes the emphasis is different as to the rationale, whether it's to focus on climate change-related mitigation or just the emphasis that everybody seems to really focus on, which is that it makes the buildings healthier, it makes the people in the buildings perform better, and it's the most cost-effective way to both build and manage buildings. So it has this kind of, again, I was saying earlier, triple bottom line benefit: people, profit, and planet. And I think that the emphasis sometimes among our two great parties is different, but the investment in the idea that it makes sense for buildings to do this is very much a consensus.
And I think the bottom line is definitely we hear more about now than we ever have, whether the cost to enact these things, but it seems that some of the cost maybe for these agencies has already been invested over the last several decade, last year, as they've already retrofitted agencies or built new things. Are there standards that you guys promote at the Green Building Council that they're following to, or best practices that the federal government has been a leader on, or how are they enacting this?
Well, again, the actual combination of the standards themselves, which provide a focus on specific types of strategies. We never choose specific products to endorse, or we try to give the users of this maximum capacity to do it their own way, but accomplish from a performance standpoint the same performance. And so you'll find that that while we have a huge amount of case studies and materials that people can study, that still we're trying not to stifle creativity. One of the differences between a voluntary standard such as this one, and when we talk about the federal government, it's a little bit different. Most users of LEED do it voluntarily. The federal government, in order to do anything, has to pass legislation saying they're allowed to do it. So in some sense, there's legislation related to this, but it isn't necessarily it isn't really intended to be like a regulation or a mandate. And the difference is that typically when you have a mandate, there's always the risk that instead of that creating leadership, it sort of sets a minimum and a maximum for what people tend to do. Whereas our system, again, with varying levels of performance, a little bit like your American Express cards if you have them, if you're lucky enough to have one, there's a basic, a silver, a gold, and a platinum level of accomplishment. And what we find, especially with the military, is they are ever so competitive, even amongst the military, the different services, to accomplish platinum.
And so it's really pushed people to take a higher level there.
And they're very competitive about doing it at no additional cost. So there's this way in which there's no taste in the military, and there's no taste in the government in general. And the GSA recently did a big report on the cost benefits of these green buildings. there's no taste for doing these things in a way that's wasteful or expensive. And one of the things that the LEED standard does is it steers you away from doing that. So, for example, one way to ensure that a green building is very costly is just to build a building the normal way and then say, well, now we're going to make it green. So by definition, if you've already built the building, it's going to cost more to make it green.
Right.
And then they sort of stick on things to it that seem clever, like a something to do with a solar this or a high performance that. And that's just sort of green bling. You know, that's something you get at the party, but it isn't something that is integrated into the original design of the building. In order to make something cost effective, you have to make it part of the an integrated strategy right from the beginning. When you first start investing in it and you integrate as many of these ideas into the design process, into the value engineering, into everything that makes a building cost effective, you don't just say, now I want to make it a green building.
Well, but is that a challenge for the federal government? Because barring probably some places, you know, maybe out west where we have some newer federal buildings and things, most of our buildings, especially here in D.C., are not new. So they weren't built with these strategies in mind. And they're going to have to go back and retrofit or make a lot of changes to their existing structure.
That is a great point. One of the things that compared to new buildings, now new buildings, there's excitement because you have a capital budget and there's a little bit more money to work with. The budgets for making existing buildings more effective is often a smaller budget. But thankfully, the kinds of things that get you a LEED standard for an existing building are not remotely as expensive as the things that will be involved in doing a new building. It has a lot more to do with how you operate the building, how you manage the building, changing the behavior of the occupants and the managers so the building is managed effectively. One of the challenges that the federal government has had, as have some private sector folks, is we found that people just don't operate buildings with any consideration that's remotely as ambitious as you or I might want to make sure we're operating our car properly. You and I would take our car to get tuned up every year, whatever. No one have their billion-dollar buildings. They don't remotely take the same attention to making sure things are actually working as was originally designed. They're actually operating the building appropriately. Even with super green buildings, people treat them the way I used to treat my VCR, for those old enough on the call to know what that is, it still was blinking the time every time you looked at it because I never could figure out how to make it work.
I think everybody had that problem.
Yeah. but that's the way a lot of people are with their buildings, including their super amazing green buildings. They have these green buildings, but then they don't really know how to operate them. And so what we do with these existing buildings is we teach people how to operate their buildings, oftentimes not that doesn't require any crazy, sexy new technology, but operate the buildings with a commonsensical approach to saving money, saving energy, but also making the indoor air quality better, doing things in an efficient way, the cleaning. Maybe you have your cleaners come during the day so that you don't have to have the building lit and with energy for 4 hours just for some cleaners to be there. But you do it in the middle of the day and you save money and energy. And then the cleaners use green products so that when they're cleaning, it isn't a toxic wasteland behind them.
Well, and it's kind of the things we hear. Turn your computers off, switch your light bulbs to the CFL light bulb. I was laughing just yesterday. We did in my own personal house, we had an environmental assessment done where it was the little things that made the changes, how you dealt with the windows in the building or how you dealt with the airflow coming through or same like using your lights, what products you use. And so it was interesting to see that those gave you the best bang for your buck versus these big changes that I think people think with buildings like a green roof or solar panels or wind power,
Well, it turns out just painting your roof white, which is a little less complex than building an entire garden on your roof, is spectacularly effective with reflectant impacts and really keeping the building's heat island effect reduced and whatnot. So there are less expensive strategies. Then if you want to go to the next stage and get and actually have, be growing a garden on your roof, say in a school, which also has the benefit of teaching people about conservation, there's different ways you can go, but there's no requirement that you go from 0 to 60 in 5 seconds or that you do it in a way that's too expensive.
And I think that's a good point for the government, is thinking we don't have to think on this big scale. We can think on, you know, smaller things in individual agencies, how that works. And I think we're going to take our second break here. But when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about some of the performance of how the government's doing on actually implementing these things. So we're going to stop here and hear a few messages from our sponsor. And when we return, we'll continue our discussion. And you're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hey, it's the Geico Gecko. Now, as a federal employee, you're probably one for a smart presentation. So I've put together some charts and graphs here. There you go. That will help illustrate the money you could save by switching to Geico. First thing you'll notice is that Geico now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. Now this is big news. But that shouldn't come as any surprise from a car insurance company that has been serving government employees since 1936. And as you can see on this graph here, it's probably why we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. Yeah, no, I do actually realise you can't see these, but trust me, they're rather impressive. Especially the 97% customer satisfaction rate. And when you consider it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more, well, all you GS7 employees or above should just contact Geico. Tell him, Mike.
Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey, and the Gecko said it best. Most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above, could get a discount on their car insurance. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
I'm Bill Bransford, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Fed Talk brings you inside information on hot topics in the federal community. From the halls of Congress to federal agencies, get the latest on the laws, regulations, and activities that directly impact federal employees. Tune in to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, as we bring in the experts to bring you inside the issues.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jenny Mattingly, and I'm here with Roger Platt, and we've been talking about issues in the federal government related to going green, being green in terms of their buildings. And one of the things before we took our break I'm going to circle back around to is you mentioned the word performance, and that's important for anybody doing, you know, whether it's your own home, whether it's federal government, and especially in this day and age, the federal government's all about performance. And I think there have been some things out there that really are driving performance now on green building and sustainability within the government, and the government's trying to be a leader in this again. What are you seeing? What is the Green Building Council doing on performance issues for the government, and how are you seeing the government doing?
Okay. Well, the U.S. Green Building Council works closely with these many, many federal agencies that are using our standard, but also the federal government has learned the way that corporate America has learned, that nothing gets done on sustainability until it's somebody's job to make sure it gets done. So now multiple agencies have a kind of sustainability director. There is an environmental executive in the White House, Michelle Moore, at the Council on Environmental Quality, and she's the one who, I think in October of 2009, stood there with the President of the United States, and they identified all of these goals and standards and accountability mechanisms for the federal government. And she does a great job of making sure that these different agencies are filling out their scorecards and all the rest of it. But the way that the important thing with filling out data-related scorecards and whatnot is creating enough data that you have a powerful argument for action. You could sort of distinguish the green building movement into two broad phases. The first, where there are all of these demonstration projects, and I was describing over 10,000 buildings, 1.7 million square feet a day of new buildings. That's a big demonstration project. But much more powerful is to get data about what strategies they used, what was the cost effectiveness of various strategies, what was the longer term success or failure of different approaches. And so the more we get that, the more we can use it as a diagnostic tool to help people do a better job with performance in the future. The federal government, unlike the private sector, is in a better position to require lots of people to provide that kind of data.
Which they're doing now,
which they are doing, absolutely. And so just as the federal government is requiring people to basically communicate the level of performance of their buildings, We're finding also local and state governments. New York City, for example, has a requirement that all buildings over 50,000 square feet have to show their, again, forgive the geek speak, whatever, Energy Star score of their buildings. Just as you get an Energy Star on your computer, your building can get an Energy Star. And if it's higher than 75, it's percentile, it means in the top 25%. So federal government is doing similar things to make sure people have to talk about what their building's score and performance is. And what it turns out that does is if you are very, very proud of your level of performance, whether you are the U.S. Marines or you are Starbucks, you are less than thrilled to find that some big aspect of your capital asset base is performing incredibly poorly. And that is not true of those two that I just mentioned. So don't treat that. But there are organizations that, while they do a very good job selling the widgets they sell, it turns out they're not so good with their buildings. And when they have to disclose that, it forces them voluntarily to take steps to do a better job with that. And then that demonstrates higher performance. And what I find, whether it's the government or the private sector, is that this becomes kind of a proxy for other types of performance. So, you know, maybe the fact that Starbucks has at least a reputation for having the best coffee for an organization that sells that much coffee, but it also has the greenest buildings. And I don't think those are unrelated. I think that people that are very focused on and committed to the performance of their products are also committed to the performance of their buildings. At least we try to do everything we can to make sure that their building performance is up to the rest of their goals.
Well, and it seems that's a great way, as you said, to really push people to do it. If they understand that the performance of their buildings feeds into their bottom line.
Correct.
That gives more incentive to do it. And it, I don't
so
know.
So when the Office of Management and Budget, which might be your bottom line gang at the federal government, is checking on your score, you know, that's maybe just as terrifying as when your dad says, you know, I heard you did very well on your math test. Can I actually see the math test?
And then you've got to show it to
your teacher marked up. Because one of the things that we always emphasize about third-party certification is that a lot of organizations, including the federal government to some extent, say, you know, we don't need to have anybody else tell us whether we're doing good. We're the federal government, or you know, we're the greenest university in the country because we're Harvard, and we don't have to have anyone else ratify that. We just are Harvard, and we always tell folks that that's the equivalent of somebody saying we've discovered new types of cures for cancer, and then you say, well, where's the peer review of that? And you go, we don't need to peer review it. We're Harvard.
Right.
And similarly with the federal government, while the federal government does have a lot of accountability built into it, it adds greater credibility when at least some of the performance is actually also ratified by the third-party lead Meisters or other standards that are not necessarily just government standards, because it really gives people a reality check that they are, in fact, doing as well as the private sector.
And are you guys, is the Green Building Council tracking some of this performance? I know they've got performance.gov website, which I think they're supposed to be dumping some of this data into or filtering it through. But is it something that you are also tracking and then offering assistance of?
What we
You're
track,
not meeting it.
What we're tracking are the millions of square feet of space across the country that federal government agencies are building to LEED standards. And therefore, we get from them detailed information about what kinds of strategies they're using, whether it's existing buildings that are being managed better or older or new buildings that are being built. We have a tremendous amount of data about what they're doing. And when you put that in the context of the broader data that the federal government is collecting, you begin to have some pretty actionable information that can be, as I said earlier, diagnostic tool for doing a better job moving forward. And so we are excited that the federal government is getting as much information as they are getting. We certainly don't pretend that we know better than them about what kinds of information is best to collect, but it does tend to be similar in many respects to the kind of information that we collect when we're judging the performance of buildings. Buildings continue to be, you know, again, one of the biggest federal assets. And so when you talk about the scorecards and whatnot, the building's performance, just to give you a general sense of it, generally in the country, 40% of all energy use is by or in buildings. 75% of all electricity use is by or for buildings, inside buildings. And so it's a huge dollar figure, and the federal government is well aware of that.
And do you see, sometimes you don't, it's changed a little bit. The federal government maybe was one of the original investors in, as you said, giving that $100,000 grant. And then, you know, I think some of this fell off the radar screen, although I learned that the White House environmental executive was actually created in 93. So this has been around for a while, but it wasn't in the public eye, I guess, so much, or in even a priority of government necessarily, because there are only 14 or 15 agencies that have policies on this. But do you see that as the private sector has maybe shown leaps and bounds in some of the green building and showing performance and cost savings, that it's driven that, or is the private sector seeing all these cost savings?
Well, first of all, whether it's government or whether it's the private sector, leadership remains still a minority of the private sector and of the public sector. And it is increasingly a very robust minority. It is increasingly becoming a very noisy and influential minority. But it is not fair to say that we are undergoing, as a country and as local, state, and federal governments everywhere, a massive new love fest with this. We are instead at the point where there is, by any kind of standard, an extreme acceleration in this activity. There is increased sense that it is kind of the minimum. It is a part of any minimum approach for just good commercial performance in the private sector and competent performance in the governmental sector. But there are still plenty of people that need that. And often it's just a human being in the organization that gets very excited about this. One of the things that's so amazing about my job is that I wander around the country and the world and live in a kind of surreal alternative universe in which everybody I meet is some amazing leader who, against all odds, has put green activity on the forefront of their company's agenda or the government's agenda. 450 local and state governments now have some kind of green building, usually LEED-related incentive or commitment of their own. So we have a lot of good news. It just turns out that 450 local, state, and government agencies isn't yet a majority of our government, but it's a pretty good start. You know, so you have some real good news at the moment. And again, as I say, it's very bipartisan.
And the interest seems to be growing both at the state and local level, which I think sometimes pushes the government and federal government and vice versa as they start moving forward. Have you seen the government react to some of that global interest that you were talking about?
Well, interestingly, our State Department, again, under in the last administration, the Bush administration, and in the Obama administration, has really wanted to make our embassies kind of laboratories of interesting technology, again, showing off what that America, against perhaps some of the perceptions in Europe, where they tend to be a little snobby about the U.S. as a green country, that we in fact have all kinds of interesting and exciting technologies and products and design expertise. And LEED itself actually counts as an export, I think, under the Commerce Department's analysis of it. So because they believe it encourages U.S. companies that are used to building parts of LEED buildings in America, then are well positioned to do it in China and Europe and Africa and Asia.
So something we can offer as we're
correct
looking
yeah
to expand
yeah
markets. Yeah. Now, you brought up the embassies. Just a curiosity question. When the government decides they want to build an embassy, if a country over there, you know, has stronger green building standards, do we have to follow their standards or do we follow our own?
I believe they have, as a matter of policy, the approach of following the higher standards when they are in, for example, Stockholm. I was very interested when an expert architect in Stockholm was saying that a big shopping center in downtown Stockholm was a LEED Platinum shopping center. And to be platinum, I mean, you virtually have to, you know, have, you know, your own organic composting system. I was astonished to hear there was a giant, you know, platinum shopping center in Stockholm. But this same guy was saying to me, that is terrible, you know, terrible greenwash, you know, Roger Platt, because, you know, that is just doing what we require in Stockholm. Well, what we believe is that if there are more platinum shopping centers in Stockholm or you know, in the future, hopefully Washington, D.C. or Seattle or Portland or places that are known for real commitment to green. That's what should be on the map. Investors and others should see clusters of real performance in those places where the policies really encourage it. If you have a place or a government that has great pro-green policies, you shouldn't be prejudiced and then told, well, for you, you have to build a super platinum plus shopping center for us to even be impressed. The reality is that where policies really encourage it, and I think it's something the federal government is very keen to you know, advance, policies that create a smaller delta between what is normal practice and what is green practice. Because at the end of the day, all of these great exemplar projects only really create market transformation if the next generation of mandatory codes and minimum requirements and policies are concomitantly moving up, so that as the floor, which is what these minimum requirements are, moves up, then the people who come to the U.S. Green Building Council every morning hoping to reach the moon can move the ceiling up in a concomitant way. So you have minimum standards, governmental role, and then you have these voluntary efforts to prove that, hey, we can do better than that. And then what was once the platinum becomes the silver, and what was once the silver becomes maybe the minimum legal requirement.
And then we all move it up and forward. So
that's our secret plan for world domination.
I like it. That's a good way of looking at it. We're going to stop here for our final break and to hear a word from our sponsor. And when we return, we'll wrap up our discussion about green building in the federal government.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum. But there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good. Which brings me to the big news. GEICO now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to GEICO. So no matter if you're blue or red or in my case green, if you're a federal employee, GS7 or above, contact GEICO and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We're entering the last part of our show here, so if you do have any questions or comments for our guests, feel free to give us a call or email us, fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. And we're going to start looking at take a little different turn here. We've talked about some of the international, some of the private, and what I do want to touch on a little bit is the legislative, because Congress has not been absent from having a part in this conversation, especially lately with all the budget cuts and those talks. It seems like federal buildings are, and you know, either selling off buildings as a way to save money, which changes how government's going to look at greening, and you know, but also greening these federal buildings might be a way to find savings as well. And so I know both in the Senate and House, they've looked at initiatives to promote sustainability as a budget bottom line cost, as we talk about, because that's their focus right now. And have you been involved in that?
Yeah, well, let me step back a little bit and give you a kind of a general philosophical way that we approach this issue of advocacy. So for all these thousands and thousands of LEED certified buildings and thousands more that people want to have certified, we don't judge our success based on the number of LEED certifications. We based our success on the number of changed minds. We're trying to change minds of people at the federal government, state, and local government, their whole attitude about what green building and sustainable development initiatives can do. And we can't do that without a very robust, basically, network of chapters and people, because as everyone in this town knows, all politics is local. So when you hear from local businesses in Kentucky, I want to focus on Kentucky just a little bit because it sort of might be a surprise entry. Kentucky has two, I think, of the only zero energy schools in the country that are state subsidized, state
And so the investment. State's made this a priority.
State
then
has made that a priority, working in some cases with federal funds as well. You have the I think the a new museum religious organizations that believe in the creationism philosophy. They're building a Noah's Ark to kind of biblical specifications, but also to LEED specifications. So you have kind of a in Kentucky in particular a confluence of cultural factors that shows that this is truly ready for a broader primetime audience. And you have in the federal government's you have in that dynamic of local and federal the basis for real successful advocacy. You have people locally making the case for schools to make sure that every child gets into a green school. And then you have this new generation, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, of people that may have different views on a bunch of issues, but they all think, of course, you have to be in a green building. That's where I went to school.
It's kind of that culture change as they're brought up in it.
Correct. They become essentially natives of the green building revolution, whereas people like myself with white hair were sort of the immigrants, and these children have to teach us the way the children of immigrants teach them this new language of green. So federal legislative initiatives in this area that we've been engaged with are ones that help ensure, for example, that all GSA workers are properly educated so we have greater capacity to do the kind of retrofitting and greening of buildings. Legislation Russ Carnahan, chair of the High Performance Buildings Caucus in the House of Representatives, a bipartisan caucus, he's got legislation that would do a lot to encourage federal buildings to use the most up-to-date codes and to be higher performing. So you have a, I think, again, on a bipartisan basis, a focus on this issue. But when this issue of cost effectiveness comes up, we have to be extremely diligent in not allowing green to be or high sustainable buildings to be sort of marginalized as one of those, you know, not must-haves, but sort of, you know, maybe we could have kind of things that get cut. Because in our view, they are one of the solutions to a clever cost-cutting strategy that gives people confidence that you're cutting, but you're also in the 21st century still, rather than one of those things that's obvious for getting rid of.
Well, one of the challenges I wonder if you run into is that, as you know, so much in Congress and when we're looking at things is a short-term look, and not every— you know, if they're looking at cost analysis, not everything with green building is short term. In fact, sometimes it's a much more longer analysis to see some of those savings and realize it. Is that something you're running into?
That's a huge, huge problem. And it's something that federal employees and experts on this have complained about for decades. And it relates to the way the scoring rules, it relates to the way in which Congress wants to have appropriate oversight without sort of giving people kind of a blank check to evolve these projects moving forward. And it's a little bit of tension between our constitutional focus on accountability and then sort of the common sense idea that you can't kind of have people go back to Congress every time they're changing a part of a blueprint in order to make a building more efficient or more effective. Or when you're selling buildings, there's this fear somehow that government agencies, if they start selling buildings, will use that money to do other things without checking with Congress. Anything that raises money for a federal agency gives anxiety to Congress that Congress is not going to be the one deciding with the power of the purse how to make these things work. So you have some interesting kind of combination of constitutional and ways that government works, challenges for people who want to be creative in managing their real estate better, plowing that money back into more successful real estate. A lot of times what happens is any money they make off making their building greener, more efficient, just goes back into the treasury. They don't get any benefit of it. And then you have this sort of odd skewed incentive in which people aren't properly incentivized to make the greener investment.
So there's not like a sustainability fund or anything that
some agencies have figured out a way. I don't know how many dots they had to twist around to make it work. But I mean, seem to be doing a better job than others. But it is a real challenge. The governmental, just exactly like you're saying, the focus on annual budgeting. You know, to some degree, there's some analogies in the private sector where you've got to hit your quarterly, you know, objective. So the longer term thinker isn't always the one who's going to get the biggest kudos. But at the same time, what we're finding is many of the things that are part of a good green building strategy have 1 or 2 year paybacks, which is pretty good, even in federal speak.
Right. And one of the things you mentioned was the House High Performance Building Caucus.
Mm-hmm.
Who are they? What are they working on? And did the Green Building Council have a hand in kind of helping get this caucus up and running? Or?
Well, I don't want to take credit for that. I think there's a bunch of wonderful groups over the years that have really had a hand in that, including the Association of for the Engineers, as ASHRAE group, and there are others that have helped make that a real an area of focus for technical input and expertise. We have been very eager to and have encouraged the creation of a Green Schools Caucus at the federal level.
So looking at some of the different interest areas. And
If you're not getting the point quite as much as I really want to make it, Rick Fedrizzi, our current CEO, is just an extremely inspirational speaker on this issue of green schools. His wife's a school teacher. He's just convinced that this generational change is the most important thing we can do, especially when Congress is so gridlocked and there is so much partisan friction around making progress. If we can really create a new generation of young adults that are committed to this, and that's so we have the Green Schools Caucus, not only at the federal government, but in more than 30 states, we actually have now a bipartisan Green Schools Caucus in the state legislature. So we're very proud of that kind of grassroots effort. Again, really kudos to our own members and chapters throughout the country for making that happen.
And one of the things you said, kind of switching tracks, but you mentioned it as we were talking over the last several minutes, is that the federal government provides money to other people funding for going green. It's not just doing sustainability projects for itself. It's actually giving grants, I imagine, to what businesses, states.
It can do that both for states in the stimulus legislation. Some states, all states, were given quite a lot of money to spend on retrofitting buildings, and you know the we haven't gotten the total scorecard yet back on that, but that's very, very important, how we invest that money, federal money, the most efficient way at the local level.
And so watching the dollars and the bottom line and seeing the returns, I imagine, on investments that way is going to be helpful to convincing the government to keep moving forward.
We need to figure out what were good investments and what were terrible investments and make sure that we're learning from that.
So, well, I think we're going to wrap up a little bit here, and we're closing to the end of our show. And one of the things we didn't do at the beginning was have you give us your website as well and where we can find more information on this.
Okay. Well, the U.S. Green Building Council's initials, USGBC. Our website is simply www.usgbc.org. And then we also have a website you can get to from that or separately for the Center for Green Schools. But really, the USGBC website is a place where you can explore a lot of these through blogs, through other materials. And then I didn't get into it, but people get certified by us to become green building experts. You have 150,000 lead accredited professionals now around the world, and you can learn that too.
So great. Well, if people want to find more information about this, I encourage them to go there. And I thank you for joining us on the show. It was a lot of really interesting information, and I think we'll be hearing more about this in the future. And that's all the time we have for the show today. And I want to thank everybody for listening. And Fed Talk is brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. And have a good weekend.